Black Forest. Yeah, Black Forest, Black Forest, Black Forest, Forest, Forest. Say, you know, I knew I should have made a left turn at Albuquerque. What's up, Doc?
It's mocha latte time. Coming up on the podcast this week, we have the coffee scenes from Albuquerque and Taos, New Mexico, as well as a follow-up interview with Corey from episode 14's Crave Coffee and Gelato, as well as a Mod Dog piece that hit number one this week on Acid Planet, all coming up next. Welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is your host, Circus Boy Nathan, coming to you from the Flying Dutchman RV. This is my podcast, sometimes weekly, sometimes not, usually a weekly podcast, where I try out the coffee scenes every town I'm in each week on my motorcycle when I travel around with the circus. That's right, the circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee, and I'm a trumpet player in the circus band, and doing traveling, visiting about 50 cities a year roughly, and checking out the coffee scenes. And you guys are here with me this week in El Paso, Texas. If you remember from last week's podcast, I was up in Taos, New Mexico, and talk a little bit more about that in a second. But I'm here in El Paso this week. We just finished up the run of shows here in El Paso, and I'm literally a stone's throw from the border, the Mexican border, right across from Juarez, which is just across the way, just across the Rio Grande River, actually, over there. And I'm less than a mile away. But unfortunately, I didn't get to celebrate Cinco de Mayo over there this year. I had to work the next day, you know, and you can't party hardy when you have to be up and perform, you know, in the show. But yeah, good stuff. I want to say first, sorry it's taking so long to get this podcast up. There are a couple things. I was busy this week. I started on my Project Espresso machine, the one I mentioned I got on eBay. It's exactly the same as the one I'm currently using, my KitchenAid Pro line machine, which I'm pretty happy with. And I bought another one to tinker around with. For number one is because I want to put a PID in it. And if there goes my phone, why's my phone ringing? I'll call him back later. Don't worry. This podcast is obviously I don't edit it. If I say something crazy, I put it up there. But yeah, I'm gonna put a PID in the machine. And for anyone who's wondering, you're saying, Nathan, what in the world is a PID? Well, it's a temperature control device that will allow you to precisely control the temperature on your espresso machine. As you all know, or well, may not know, there's optimal temperatures for pulling espresso shots or brewing drip coffee, or coffee for that matter, and it's generally right around 200 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, different as you get pickier and as an espresso purist, I guess you could say, you tinker with little things that as you kind of hone in your espresso skills, you start trying to eliminate different factors, different variables, so that you can replicate an amazing shot of espresso. Some people call it the God shot. There goes my phone again. Each time that you pull a shot of espresso. So you want to control the temperature, which the optimal is right around 200 degrees Fahrenheit. You want to control the grind of the bean, how fine. And as we heard from AJ the barista in a past episode, that that changes with the weather, even if the barometer is rising, falling, humidity, and stuff like that. And you also want to control, in some cases, the pressure. Typically it's 9 bar pressure, but they have some espresso espresso machines out now where you can tinker with the pressure that you use in the machine as well. And then you have the quality of the water, of course, and you know, and then your tamp, what kind of tamper, whether you have a flat tamper or convex tamper. So there's really, if you want to get into espresso, I mean, there's the options are almost limitless. But anyways, I digress. That all started because I was talking about one of the reasons the podcast is delayed this week, because I have a Project Espresso machine. And sitting here in front of me in 5 million parts, and I have it apart, and I don't know where to put the wires on the PID. So I, you know, it's typical of me. My adventurous spirit. I was all gung ho to take this thing apart, and I got a good deal on it because it was missing the portafilter, which is the little thing with the handle that you put the coffee in. It was missing that. It was a little rusty in a couple places, but I turned it on, heated up, and you know, it takes water through. The only thing, it just needs to be cleaned up inside. Whoever had it before didn't take care of it, and so it's pretty dirty around the brew group there. And I want to put the PID in it, and I figure since I got it so cheap, if I screw it up, then you know, it's no big loss, and you know, just I can chalk it up to experience, or who knows. It's a good machine, and it's kind of cool to see the innards, and kind of see the machine that I've been using for a couple months now, what it looks like inside with the boilers and such. But yeah, so, and then the second reason, I digress, see, I'm just chatting away here, is that the Podomatic site, which hosts this, I use the podcast, was actually, they're upgrading software or something, so for like 3 or 4 days, I actually couldn't upload anything, because there was a glitch that said I had exceeded my limit, which wouldn't let me put any more, you know, media, be it podcast or pictures or whatever, up online. So that's the other reason. So I apologize, but it's going to be a great podcast. So stick around. You guys are in for a great treat. You got to sit down with Corey, who, if you remember from episode 14, we were actually at the Crave Coffee and Gelato, a house there in Wilmelsdorf, Pennsylvania. I was there, actually, my family was there that night, because it's pretty close to where my parents live, where I went to high school and college, in that general area of Pennsylvania there, and got to sit down and kind of do a follow-up with them, and kind of see, it's kind of cool, we get to watch, you know, you're all, everyone listening, I guess you're not watching, you're listening, but you all get to see how the cafe, you know, we're kind of falling from its infancy through its development, and they're doing great things. It's really exciting to see, just in the past, what's it been, 4 months, I think it was, what, December, and it's May now, so it's been, you know, four months since we got to sit down, and just great things are happening. So you get to check that out, and I'll talk a little bit about the coffee scenes, as I said, in Albuquerque and Taos, as well as talk about my motorcycle a little bit for all you motorcycle enthusiasts. I know I said I would do that before, but yeah, I gotta talk about the bike. You know, I mean, I definitely know there's people that ride motorcycles out there listening to the podcast, and that's really cool. And I'd love to hear from you guys, actually, because I have a actually, I just put a forum up. That's another thing I've been doing. This so many things going on this week, and I've been getting ready for the trip to Hawaii, exciting things about that. So much stuff going on. It's crazy, but good crazy, not bad crazy. But yeah, so you're on along for the ride today. I'm gonna jump right into the interview. I'm gonna stop chatting away and jump right into the interview with Corey. And it's gonna be two parts, because we had a lot of good stuff to talk about, and I got a lot out of it. I'm sure you guys will too. So it's gonna be part one. Then we'll take a break and maybe talk about motorcycles and coffee and maybe Taos, New Mexico, a little bit, and then part two, and then go into finish up the podcast for the week. So here's the interview. Enjoy. So So I'm here with Corey from Crave Coffee House, and if you'll remember him from episode 14 when we got to sit down with them there in Wilmersdorf, Pennsylvania. So welcome to the podcast again, Corey.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So it's been about, 4 months since we talked to you, and I thought it'd be cool. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, yes, it has. It's been 4 months, and it goes fast.
Yeah, time flies, I guess, in the food industry. Has it been a good 4 months, would you say?
It's been a good 4 months as far as our business evolving and just learning the coffee and food business. We had a wonderful Christmas season, and the winter was a little slower, but as with most retail and food establishments, the sales drop off a little bit. I think people recover from the holidays and things of that nature, plus the winter and the bad roads and stuff like that. So sales were down, but as spring is approaching, our traffic's been picking up, and it's been a nice turnout here of late.
Yeah, and I heard you guys have actually expanded now. Within your first 6 months that I guess you guys have been open, you have now have a new location, is that right?
Yes, we opened a market stand at an 1800s restored farmer's market in Lebanon, and there's about 30 vendors, and we have a small stand. It's about 10 by 16. But within that square footage, we have a La Marzocco espresso machine. We also have a 12-flavor gelato case, and we have two pastry cases, which we offer all of our sweets and drinks that we have at our main coffee house in Wilmersdorf. The only thing that we don't offer at the market stand is the food, and some of that's due to restrictions on space, but also the other vendors that are there, they have a wider selection, so we decided to be a little bit more focused on our coffee and gelato and pastries.
That's great. Now, what was the original... I mean, what got you interested in deciding to branch out, this early? Because a lot of coffee shops that I've been to and have visited, you know, they'll focus on getting really established for a couple years and then maybe think about, you know, venturing out. What kind of got you guys into the ball game as far as, you know, even thinking about opening, kind of like a satellite location, I guess?
Well, in our original business plan, we had decided to open our shop and in the future have, like you said, satellite or second locations. We actually, one of our customers that loves our shop is the owner of the market, and he was basically restoring it and had just opened it and invited us to come up and take a look at it, and encouraged us to consider opening a stand, and we felt that it would be a good decision to open in a neighboring market. And there's about 12 miles between our shop and this market stand. It's far enough away that we're not competing with our own location, but it's close enough for product recognition that our customers will say, oh yes, this is the Crave from Wilmersdorf, we love it down there, or I saw you have a location in Wilmersdorf, maybe I'll have to go down and check that out. So it kind of plays with one market stand, and it plays with our coffee shop that our customers can visit it on a shopping situation at the market, or as a destination and a stop for a nice cup of coffee and a relaxing atmosphere.
That's great. Now, that kind of leads into my next question, which was, have you found that you've been kind of gathering a loyal, I don't know if you call it fan base, but, you know, customer base, I guess, that you find, you know, repeat customers. And I remember you saying before, you know, word of mouth, you know, getting around. Have you found that really being the case and kind of growing that daily or weekly customer base?
Well, for sure, we are getting a more loyal customer base, a lot of return customers. We have our regulars now at both locations. One of the things that we offer is what we call our Crave 8 card. And basically, as you purchase 8 coffees or teas, you get the 9th one for free. So it's the back of our business card. We stamp it. And we're now getting Crave 8 cards from both locations. So it shows that there are repeat customers and that the general public enjoy what we have to offer and want to come back multiple times. In addition to that, our foot traffic has increased, and at our main location in Wilmersdorf, we have live entertainment Friday and Saturdays. That has turned into a pretty popular event, and people anticipate coming to hear a new group, or perhaps we have a group that played there before, and you know, they look forward to coming and hearing them again. So it's actually turned into a nice place of entertainment for people to come and listen to free music, plus sit back with a cappuccino or a latte or pastry or gelato, and you know, it really is a returning favorite for customers. We're still trying to encourage new customers, and with advertising and whatnot, we're reaching more new customers, and most of them say that this is my first time here, or I've heard about you, I've just never been here. So it's nice when we get to introduce ourselves to new people and allow them to experience what we have to offer.
Yeah. Now, have you found, as you've grown, have you found it's harder to, you know, find, like, for example, skilled baristas? You know, anybody can walk up to a coffee machine and, you know, kind of do the stuff to make the coffee or whatever. But as far as the skill and building the skill level and your baristas, have you found that a challenge as you guys grow?
Well, fortunately for us, a lot of our original employees are still with us, and they've really grown and learned the espresso machine and all the drinks quite well. In addition to that, we have employees from other coffee shops coming to us and approaching us seeking employment that, you know, perhaps they want to experience something different, or they like how our shop is, and the aesthetics and the service and the quality. So it really hasn't been a major issue finding qualified people. You know, like I said, we've been fortunate. We have a number of our original employees that have really proven to be quite reliable, and you know, we rely on them heavily, you know, I think our customers appreciate seeing a familiar face, and we want to continue that if we can. But really, with your answer, no, it's actually been easier, I believe, finding the help we needed than we might have perhaps anticipated.
That's cool. Now, I remember you also said, as far as training goes on the barista side, that Counterculture, who's your supplier of all your coffee, they had been giving you training as well on the equipment and stuff. How is that going for you guys?
Since our opening, Counterculture, our rep Darren Berlin has been up, and he's gone over some other coffees that we're starting to introduce, some regional coffees. In addition to that, he's worked with some of our employees on some latte art. So they do offer continuing support and training for us, and you know, it's something that we take any kind of assistance and help that we can get, just because the more education we have about it, the better we can serve the needs of our customers. And you know, quite frankly, a lot of trial and error, and just, you know, trying new things for our employees. And you know, right, we've had some in-house, I don't want to say games, but contests to name some new drinks and come up with some new lattes, and that was quite fun for our employees. So out of that, we came up with some new flavors and some fun names, and some of which have turned into real favorites for our customers.
Yeah, you had mentioned, I was talking to you a little bit earlier here, you had mentioned there's one called, well, maybe you should describe it, because it's your drink there. You said it was, what was it, a new kind of special mocha, is that correct?
Yep. Well, your quest is for the best mocha latte in the United States or the world. I'm not sure how far out you're willing to go, but... one of the drinks that we came up with that we offer at our shop is called a zebra mocha, and basically it's dark and white mocha for the latte, and the flavor is quite unique, and it doesn't look striped, although when you're stirring in the froth on the top, you can kind of swirl it around and give it somewhat of a multiple shade look, but it's basically the ingredients, the white and the dark chocolate, and that's what we call our zebra, and it's worth coming back and trying.
Huh, that's great. Now, on that side of new things, is there anything that's happened, you know, since you've opened the shop that you couldn't have anticipated, that you kind of had to adapt to on the fly?
I would say the biggest issue that we face as a small business is the size of our kitchen and storage area. We've outgrown our refrigeration and our prep area. We've actually begun the expansion of our kitchen from a 10 by 20 prep area, we're expanding into a 20 by 30 kitchen and prep area. We've also purchased a walk-in refrigerator freezer and purchased a number of additional refrigeration units. So that's probably been the one single thing that we really underestimated, and that was storage and refrigeration. And, you know, as we grow, you know, we're seeing how that plays a valuable part in being productive and cost effective, and by being able to buy in bulk and store it at you know, the proper temperature until you're ready to use it. So that's probably been our biggest obstacle so far.
Now I know you said you had some challenges in that sense. There's some other coffee shops I know in your area, and even down in Philadelphia, there's a couple new ones that have opened. Have you found that there's a community of sorts, whether it be coffee or just the food service community, that you've been able to connect with and kind of, you know, glean information from or bounce ideas off of?
Well, from the beginning, when we started researching our coffee business, We made some connections with other coffee shop owners, and they've been more than willing to share information and you know, give us some pointers and direction along the way. Since we've opened, we've really maintained contact with those people and have relied on them, you know, to bounce ideas off of or questions or obstacles. We've had some just through friendships, through buying restaurant equipment through the salesperson he has a wealth of knowledge that we've been communicating with him and getting help with, you know, our equipment from him. And also, we had a great friend who we recently hired, who's a graduate from the Culinary Institute, and he has a wealth of knowledge with food service and food in general. So, you know, we're trying to grow as the doors are open. But yeah, we do rely on the community of I'll say coffee houses and you know, and it's really a unique group of people, and all of them have been really wonderful and willing to share what they can with us to see us succeed as they have. So it's been pretty nice that way.
So it's kind of, I guess the environment then is kind of like a friendly competition, I guess you could say, then, amongst the cafes and so forth.
Exactly. Yeah, no one's really thrown up a flag and said, you're our enemy, you're our competition. Everybody's been very, very welcoming and encouraging, so it's been nice.
Alright, good stuff. More to come in a few minutes. So, motorcycles and coffee. I think that's a great match. You know, as I mention every week, you know, I have the Flying Dutchman RV, but RVs aren't that conducive to to getting around, especially when you're going to visit coffee shops. And, you know, when I originally started with the circus, I thought about bringing a car on the road, but for me, a car was more than I needed out here. And so, without ever having driven a motorcycle in my life, I had once I had a motorcycle ride when I was maybe, I don't know, 6 years old. And about almost 20 years later, when I decided to join the circus, I took my motorcycle safety, the MSF class there in Virginia, and bought my first bike, and that became my main mode of transportation. And I'm so glad. If all you listening have never ridden a motorcycle, it's a truly unique way to experience the world and experience travel, really. You know, for me, in trying the coffee shops, one of the fun parts is just getting there, really, on the bike. And you know, one, I think it was Robert Pearsig says in his Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which even if you aren't interested in motorcycles in the least, it's still a great book to read. Really good stuff in there. He talks about how riding motorcycles is so different from driving in a car. He makes the analogy that, you know, riding in a car is like watching TV, because you're watching everything go by in a frame outside, you know, through a window or through a frame. And it's like watching TV, whereas on a motorcycle, you know, you feel the wind, you feel the rain, you know, all you have to do is put your foot, you know, 4 inches down, and you feel the pavement underneath your feet, you know, going by. And so you're an active participant in the scenery and what you're going through. And it's so true. It's a great, I know it's dangerous. A lot of people, my mom had, my mom had many chagrins about me, you know, taking up, motorcycles. But I mean, I really think there's no other way to travel, even though it kind of stinks if it's snowy or rainy, but, still good stuff. So my bike, and I wanted to give a nod to all the people out there that ride motorcycles. You know, one of my favorite things to do is if I have an afternoon or a day, just to plan out, get a map, plan out a route, you know, around the local, you know, maybe like a 100-mile loop or maybe a 200-mile loop, depending on the weather and how many places, you know, want to stop. And just, you know, check out coffee shops. Like last year when I was in Seattle, which was, I believe that was before I started the podcast. Yeah, it was actually way before I started the podcast. I took a day trip. I was in Seattle visiting relatives, which I'm going to try to get up to Seattle again this year. That should be a lot of fun. And just took the bike up, rode. There's a lot of ferries and islands, and all the islands are connected with the ferry service. I don't remember the name of the transportation, whatever, up there, but made a day of it, and rode north over, took a ferry over to Whidbey Island, and rode up, then took a ferry over to Port Townsend, down through Poolsbow, and back across the Sound to Seattle. And it took about a day, and it was just beautiful, you know, and getting to meet people out on the island, trying the local, got to try the pie at Whidbey Farm, which is reportedly the best pie on the island, and it's just great. Got to drink coffee, got to try out this coffee shop in Poolsbow, and, you know, just a great little local place, you know, independent coffee shop, and, you know, just take a book along to read, or, you know, maybe write down, you know, whatever thoughts you were thinking about on the ride there. And it's just, yeah, it's a great way to experience life, and a great way to try coffee. You know, I always say on the podcast, drink what you like what you drink, and I guess I should add, try something new, you know, because there's so many things out there, and you never know if you like it until you try it. And yeah, so in my case, with my motorcycle, I actually have a there's different kinds of bikes, you know, Harleys, cruisers, sport bikes. I have just a 620 cc Ducati Monster, and it's an Italian bike, and, you know, as I like all things Italian, espresso, and I affectionately refer to my bike as my Italian girlfriend, because she tends to be high maintenance, but she is definitely a looker. And it's a flat black motorcycle, and I just got pipes on her. Some people ask how fast she goes. Well, basically as fast as you want to go on there. It's a pretty fast bike, but it's a lot of fun. It's my first bike, and put pipes on there this week, which I want to send a shout out to Aaron at cyclevault.com. If any of you guys out there ride motorcycles, he was really cool. I bought the pipes off of him, and has a great little business there for restoring a motorcycle, keep the dust out and stuff. So if you have a chance, cyclevault.com. But yeah, it's and that's my motorcycle, and she gets me. I put about 13,000 miles on her in the first year. Had her, just had the 12,000 mile service done. Bikes, you typically have to service a little bit more than cars, because the engines are smaller, and anything with a smaller engine obviously wears quicker than say like a typical car engine. But yeah, so motorcycles, good stuff. I'll probably, somewhere in here, I'll probably put some maybe motorcycle sounds in the background or something. And yeah, I also want to send a shout out to Harley Dude and the Beamer Man Roadshow, which, if you're riding motorcycles, go check out their podcast. You can find it through iTunes. There, just go to iTunes and type that in. So yeah, and speaking of motorcycles and riding around the country taking day trips, as I mentioned, I was up in Taos, New Mexico, but I think I'm going to save the Taos and Albuquerque coffee scenes for after the rest of the interview, and then we'll finish up the podcast and give you my dog's hit, his number one hit this week. So here it is. What would you say is the biggest thing you've learned out of this whole process from day one, and you know, and this whole, I guess, I don't know, from, you know, going from the concept to you know, getting the funding to putting it into actuality to now you're expanding, what would you say is probably the most important thing that you've learned, I guess that you could even say you'd pass on to someone who's maybe looking to open their own coffee shop somewhere around the world?
Well, I don't know that there's one single thing that I could isolate. Some of the things that we've faced is being our like being a new shop and not having any comparisons to go by. It's been really difficult knowing what kind of sales or traffic you're going to get. For now, each day is a new day. We've never had a May 1st to look back and see, oh, sales have been this. So it's difficult to project staffing or inventory for a specific weekend. So that's been challenging, not knowing what the next month will bring. Another thing that we've learned and are still learning is just purchasing supplies and managing overhead and inventory. It's been very challenging. And here again, not knowing what next week or next month is going to bring, you anticipate by buying supplies, and you're almost making your own learning curve as you go. So those couple of things have been really, I don't want to say difficult, but challenging for us. And you know, each day is a new day, and we learn a lot. So that would be probably the most challenging for us that I would pass along to someone is, you know, try and do some research. If you can talk with existing coffee shop owners to get a sense for traffic flow and sales volume, that's very helpful, because when we got into it, we really didn't have anybody to bounce things off of like that. So that would be a helpful thing for someone just starting.
Okay. And quickly before we finish up here, what coffees are you guys currently serving for your drip coffees and also your espresso?
Well, we have our house blend, which we get through Counterculture. It's organic, shade-grown, fair trade coffee. Our espresso bean is from Counterculture. Also, I'm not sure if that's a blend or if that's a specific region for the espresso. Can't recall.
Is it the Toscano or the Forte?
Yes, it's the Toscano.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's a blend. Yep.
And we've since started brewing Sumatran and Guatemalan to start introducing regional coffees. And we're more or less we've been going by the recommendation of Counterculture, and their advice is to establish our house coffee and then introduce regional coffees slowly so that people are allowed to try them but become more familiar with our house coffee, and then as time goes by add another region to our offerings and kind of grow our coffee that way. So we've been over the holidays we offered a holiday blend, and so now we're offering the Sumatran and Guatemalan, and in the future we'll be adding more, and I guess it's we're just kind of going by the like I said the recommendations of Counterculture, and when they feel that it's time that we introduce another one, then that's when we'll pick and decide to offer it.
Great. And okay. So last question is what do you see in the future for Crave? Is it world domination or what is it?
Well, Starbucks is intimidated by us. That's fine. I think our short-term goals would be to continue to strengthen our customer base with our existing main shop and our market stand. we do have some thoughts about perhaps doing some other locations. Like I had said to you back in December, you know, branching out into a little stronger demographic areas with a higher foot traffic. For now, we're content with growing as we have up until this point, but don't be surprised that if you interview me, you know, in September, if we wouldn't have another location.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty aggressive, and you know, we're confident that what we have is worth giving to people, and you know, if we can offer another site for them to enjoy our products, you know, we're gonna try and do it if we can. The biggest challenge with that is raising capital for, you know, a new venture, but you know, it's something that we work on every day. So
yeah. Well, great.
Only time will tell.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you, Corey, for taking the time to sit down here with us from afar. I'm in Albuquerque, and I guess you're probably in we're at Lebanon or Reading there.
actually, I'm in Wilmelsdorf right now, Wilmelsdorf, Pennsylvania.
Oh, you are in Wilmelsdorf. Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast again, and hopefully the next time we check in with you there, you will you'll have hopefully your next shop, and things will be going wonderfully there.
All right, Nathan. Well, I appreciate the call and the follow-up, and I look forward to serving you a zebra in the future.
Great. Take care now.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Welcome back. Good stuff. So I'm going to jump right into the coffee scene this week because I have a lot of places and I want to get finished up here quick so the podcast doesn't run too long for you guys. But then again, you can turn it off and start it later if you want to. So, Taos, New Mexico, and Albuquerque. The Taos coffee scene, I was very surprised. This place is up in the mountains. You know, it's like 6,500 feet elevation or something like that. And, you know, it's kind of a small town, resort town, mainly a ski resort town. And this was the off season. I didn't really expect that many coffee shops to exist, but I was delightfully surprised. The first place is World Cup Espresso. Now, this is a little place right on the corner downtown, and very European kind of feel. There's not a lot of place to sit down. It's kind of more of a grab-and-go type classic European espresso bar, and great espresso. They actually have four different mochas that you can choose from. So, you know, if you're a mocha latte connoisseur as well, it gives you quite a variety to choose from. And also, most people end up sitting outside on the benches, just kind of watching the pace of the town there, and usually in the morning, there's at least one or two motorcycles there, and can chat. So it's really cool little place there, World Cup Espresso. Now the mocha, I got I wrote here, good mocha in the mountains ? Wow. Served auto to go cup, Aston whipped cream, good foam, but no latte art. Pretty nice espresso. I like the chocolate in this drink. It was called Dilettante, I believe it is. But it was a little too much of the chocolate in the drink. Overall, very high quality, 4.6 beans. Next up is, turn the page here, Cafe Taza, or maybe it's Taza, I don't know how you pronounce it, but this place is one of the original coffee shops in the town, and really cool place, definitely a southwestern feel, you know, with the adobe and everything. I walked in, and there's this old grand piano sitting there, and kind of eclectic art on the wall, and the guy was practicing his guitar, you know, acoustic guitar in the next room, and two guys were out in the back patio debating politics, you know. So it was just a really cool kind of, you know, peaceful, relaxing kind of atmosphere. And I believe they also serve Cafe Vita beans from Seattle as well. So good stuff. Now the mocha, a decent drink, but the espresso seemed a little off. Had a bit of bitterness to it, actually. Okay chocolate, good foam, but no latte art. Served in-house cup. Overall, nice drink with potential, so 4.3 beans. Next up is Culture Cafe. Now, there's two of them in town. The main one is south of the downtown, and it's a video store slash coffee house kind of combined, and definitely a place where the locals hang out and kind of congregate and just chill and get coffee. I went to the one up on the north side of town, which is the newer of the two and smaller, and also a video place, very cool guy behind the counter. The mocha, on the other hand, though, served auto-to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, loose foam, average chocolate, and very weak, perhaps stale, maybe, espresso taste. Wouldn't drink again. 2.9 beans on that. Next up is Pablo Blanca Coffee House. Now, if you remember a little earlier in the podcast here, I said I took a motorcycle trip. I did that 100-mile loop up through Cuesta and Red River, Angel Fire, so forth. In Cuesta, which is about 20 miles north of Taos, there's a little place, kind of a, looks like a cabin from the outside. It's on, if you're going north, it's on your left-hand side. And very cool people. I tried the spinach quiche, and kind of quaint inside, but very nice owners, and they do have internet there, Wi-Fi, as well as some computers, and homemade food, and espresso as well, and it's right at the base of the mountains. Beautiful view there, beautiful. So the mocha, I wrote here, decent mocha, chocolate was Ghirardelli's, I think, espresso was weak, could hardly taste it, actually. Aston whipped cream, served in-house cup, average foam, just needed better espresso shots. So 3.8 beans on that. Next up is Taos Java, and this was the last one I tried in Taos. And this place was kind of a cross between a cliche espresso, cliche coffee house, and a southwestern cliche. I mean, it's definitely a coffee house, and I guess one of the things that stood out to me most was the door. Most door jams are in the shape of a rectangle. Well, in this case, it was kind of the left door jam was a squiggly line, which is kind of cool, you know, very artistic. And walked in, and you know, they had the couches, and there's some chairs and tables, beautiful. I think it was a La Pavone espresso machine with the big boiler up on top, and you know, the steam boiler, and the eagle up on top there. So just really, really nice looking machine there. They also have a drive-through too. But as far as the mocha goes, not that great of a drink. First impression was bitter espresso. Chocolate was okay. Foam was a little loose. Chocolate sauce was on top. Served auto to go cup. Aston whipped cream. Wouldn't drink again on that. So 3.3 beans on the Taos Java. So that's it for Taos. Now we'll go all the way down to Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is where we played last week, and the first place is a Blue Dragon. Now, the Blue Dragon, it's kind of funny, because if you don't know where it is, even if you see it on a map, you'll drive right by it. It looks like, I literally drove by it two or three times looking for it. It looks like an apartment from the outside, you know, because there's no, I think there might be a small sign saying Blue Dragon, but it's very unassuming in the way, and I think that's the way people like it. And it's right off a old Route 66, which is Central Avenue there through the middle of Albuquerque. And the Blue Dragon, you walk in, and even the doors when you walk in, I think they're just like regular household doors, you know, like you go into an apartment or something. So it kind of sets the tone for the very, you know, laid back kind of atmosphere inside, and you know, very indie feel, independent kind of feel on the inside. Not real fancy. Some booths in one room, and chairs and tables in the other. I think they have a pool table, you know, like a billiards table there. And so, yeah, no frills, but good food. I tried the food. And the mocha, I wrote here, had potential. Served in-house cup, Aston whipped cream, fairly loose foam, though. Wasn't a fan of the chocolate in this drink. So-so espresso. This drink was just there, so 3.9 beans. Next up is Taza Coffee and Tea. Maybe it's Taza. It's on the northwest side of the city there, closer to actually Rio Rancho than it is to downtown Albuquerque. But it's in kind of the end of a strip mall. This is kind of the cliche coffee house, although it was, it was very clean and well organized for the, you know, small space that it was. And they have a flat screen TV on the wall there with a little, I think, gas fireplace. So, you know, very welcoming, nice people behind the counter there. The mocha latte, however, I wrote a pretty average drink all around. Aston whipped cream, served auto to go cup, okay chocolate. Espresso seemed average, just a little weak in the balance overall. Loose foam, 3.4 beans on that one. Next up is Crave. Now, I know we just talked with the owner of Crave, which I thought this was the only Crave in existence until this one in Albuquerque. And in downtown Albuquerque, you have the historic downtown. And they have a lot of little shops. They have an old church there, beautiful old church, that's from, like, I don't know, 1700s, I think. And then a lot of shopping and crafts and kind of place. This is, Crave was kind of more of a touristy coffee and ice cream type of joint. And so I was there on a Tuesday morning, and I actually got to talk with the owner a little bit, because on Tuesday mornings, that's usually who's running the business, is the owner on that time. So, but I wrote on the mocha here, pretty close to chocolate water. Served out of the go cup, little to no foam, subpar chocolate, barely any espresso noticeable. Did ask on whipped cream, 2.2 beans on that. Next up is Red Rock Cafe. Now, I'm just, the mocha at this place, well, I'll give you the review right away. The shot was way underpooled, maybe only 10 seconds pooled. This weak bitter espresso used Hershey's chocolate, served in house cup, auto whipped cream, no foam, wouldn't drink again, 2.8 beans. And this place was in the back of an art gallery there, also in the old downtown area. And they serve like gyros and stuff as well, and a little bit of seating place, but just not good coffee there. Next up is Java Joe's. Now this place also is right off of Route 66, and it's kind of hard to find because of the one-way streets, the maze of one-way streets there, but it's right downtown. Interesting place. They do have Wi-Fi when it works. I know the people that were there trying to use it were kind of complaining because it wasn't working. And then the inside, there's some tables and stuff to sit down. There's chairs outside as well. And they do roast their own beans. I think they had it look like a small Probat there where they roast their own beans. So as far as the mocha, though, I wrote here, if mocha lattes were animals, this would be an ostrich. It's interesting to look at, but sticks its head in the sand when a challenge or taste test shows up. So, yeah. So, loose foam, Hershey's chocolate, yuck. What little espresso I could taste was covered by imbalance. Nice looking in-house cup, though. 3.1 beans on that, Java Joe's. Next up is Winning Coffee Company. Now, this is by the university there in Albuquerque. And it's a really unique place in that, I mean, there's a lot of university coffee shops, but you can bring your own mug, and then your coffee drink of choice is basically almost half price, which is really cool. I mean, you walk in, it's pretty wide open space. A lot of students cramming for tests on the laptops, you know, talking about whatever. So some big tables, a couple couches, you know, definitely no frills, but you know, the service is, it's efficient, and you know, they get the drinks and the food out, so kind of cool there. As far as the mocha, I wrote, an average mocha all around, served in-house cup, Aston whipped cream, pretty loose foam, average chocolate taste, decent espresso, chocolate had a funny aftertaste. And I wrote, take note, bring your own mug, and your mocha latte is only $1.89, and this is first, which it is. I haven't seen that before in all the places I've tried. So next up is Satellite Coffee. Satellite Coffee is a local chain there in Albuquerque. I think there's maybe three or four locations, and it's kind of a cliche, I guess, coffee house with a little bit of the, I don't know, space kind of futuristic vibe to it. So they had some couches and chairs. One thing I did notice, though, they do sell whole beans, and I think they had a few in bags, but the ones that I saw were sitting out open in the open air in bins. And even though it looks nice, that's one of the worst things you can do for coffee beans. As you all know, when I talked about roasting, after you roast that bean, you're basically in a race against time to try to do everything you can to keep you know, nature from taking its course and all the gases evaporating off and the bean going stale. Therefore, you want to keep the bean in a tight cool, airtight container away from sunlight as much as you can. Definitely not refrigerator, and definitely not in the open air. And all their coffee was in the open air, and which means that at best your coffee will last, you know, a day, you know, 2 days, maybe 3 days out in the open air. Whereas if it's stored away, you can get a week, maybe 2 weeks out of it, out of fresh roasted coffee. So don't buy whole beans at Satellite Coffee. And Satellite Coffee, if you're listening, maybe you should put your beans in containers to sell them. That way they wouldn't go stale. You wouldn't be selling stale coffee to people unbeknownst to the storage. Anyways, the mocha latte, not a good start. I asked for no whipped cream, and they put it on by accident. When I showed them, they scraped it off and reserved it to me, which is that's a no-no in the coffee shop industry. But served auto-to-go cup, terrible foam, chocolate tasted like hot chocolate mix, espresso, barely there. Wouldn't drink again. 2.9 beans on that. Next up is Napoli Coffee, and this is the last one. I know a lot of coffee shops this week. Napoli Coffee, they are a little place in Albuquerque. Very, I don't know, I guess chill kind of atmosphere inside. It's open space, big windows, big open windows from the ceiling to the floor. And they have a gas fireplace in there. Beautiful La Marzocco machine. They're serving Bettdorf and Bronson beans. And nice people behind the counter. So good stuff. Nice cafe. They have some pastries and little food things. The Mocha Latte wrote, yet another coffee place that messed up with the drink and the whipped cream and scraped it off the top. The drink had good foam. No latte art though. Pretty good espresso and a nice on a nice La Marzocco, but the chocolate was off. Left a kind of weird texture in my mouth. Served auto to go cup, 3.9 beans. So that covers the coffee scene for this week. As I said earlier, El Paso is where I'm at this week. Coming up, we have a split week between Amarillo and Lubbock. Split week is coffee talk for two towns in 1 week, so a lot of good stuff coming up next week. And after this coming week, I'm going to be taking you to Hawaii. That's right. As I mentioned last week, announced that I'm going to be going to Hawaii for 2 weeks, and going to be taking a cupping workshop there, right in the middle of Kona Country, with Willem Boot, which I don't know the name. Maybe some of you out there. He seems to be pretty well known in the coffee tasting community, so I'm really looking forward to meeting him in the cupping workshop and getting to meet other coffee people and hang out in Hawaii. And I'm going to take you all with me. So if you know anybody in Hawaii, you know, have any friends, relatives, or maybe you're listening and you live there, send me an email. I'd love to. Maybe you can give me an idea of the best places to visit, or maybe you know some coffee farmers and we could go on a farm and do an on-location podcast. That would be awesome. You can email at bestmochalatte@gmail.com. And I would love to hear from you. So yeah, Hawaii next week. And as I mentioned, I was very busy this week. If you look on the website, speaking of contact information, you can always send an email to thebestmochalatte@gmail.com. Or also, I highly recommend go check the website out for this podcast, bestmochalatte.podomatic.com. And if you go there, you'll see that I always put a picture from each week's episode and a little blurb there. And you can leave comments right on each for each episode, or there's audio comment. You can call in basically at 206-202-5127. You can call in there. That's an American number there. Or you can record a comment from the website. And there's also a new link to the forum. That's right. I wanted to create a forum to kind of, you know, for the listeners out, you know, whoever's listening, you know, to kind of connect with other listeners. You know, where in the world are you from? Or, you know, what's your favorite coffee drink? Or do you have a favorite episode, or maybe even things that you'd like to hear on the episode? Well, I set the forum up this week, and if you go to the favorite links on the right-hand side of the webpage, I'm looking at it here, it says create some buzz on the new forum. So yeah, go check it out. You know, leave a message up there, and yeah, connect with other Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World coffee listeners. So that'd be really cool. Maybe I'll put some stuff on there myself. So yeah, Good stuff, good stuff. Bestmochalatte.podomatic.com. And also I want to send a quick thank you to Blueberry.com Network for letting the podcast be part of it. That's BlueBrry.com. There's no E in fruit and no E in blueberry. So good stuff and good podcasts over there as well to check out. And yeah, that about wraps it up for this week. So I want to thank you all for listening and tuning in. I know it got a little long this week, but good stuff. I'm going to put one more podcast up before we go to Hawaii. And yeah, that'll be next week. That'll be the El Paso Amarillo Lubbock, Texas podcast. So thank you for tuning in. And also, last but not least, Mod Dog Music. As you know, every week we give you an exclusive Mod Dog hit. And we actually have one that was an international hit this week. Mod Dog, as you remember from episode 20 in Sarasota, he did, I think, I can't remember what we called it, but anyways, on Acid Planet, which is Sony, you know, that makes all the technology, Sony has a website called Acid Planet for people who write and arrange their own electronic music, and there's literally thousands of artists on that website, and this past week, Mod Dog, who you heard it here first, you heard his song here first, his song Blue Mountain hit number one. Out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of songs and artists on acidplanet.com, my dog song hit number one. So we're really honored this week to have his number one hit on the podcast. It's called Blue Mountain. So enjoy. And until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.